Hey, this is an interview for the Asian Voices Oral History Project, and I'm Deepak Chinoy conducting the interview, and I'm sitting here with Amy Weil and Arvinda Da Silva in their house in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And the date today is July 19, 1999, and we're sitting in their beautiful house and a very comfortable room, the house they've just moved into. And it's the evening, and we just thought we'd sit down and talk about the whole experience of coming to America and things like that. So did you have anything you wanted to start out with? Or?
No,
we can just start.
Okay, so
I should ask you that question first. You weren't born in U.S.
No, I was not. I was born in Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka. So when did you come to the United States?
I came here in 1982.
Okay. How old were you when you came?
I was about 19 or 20.
Uh-huh.
When I arrived.
And for what, was there any particular reason you had come? Was it for how did you come here? I don't know.
I came here as an undergraduate, as a freshman, college student.
Where did you go?
To go to Vassar College in New York.
Oh, okay.
It's a small liberal arts college about 2 hours north of New York City.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, and but were there many Sri Lankans in Vassar at that time?
There were a couple, but there wasn't really a community of Sri Lankans.
Uh-huh.
There, no.
And which language do you speak in back home?
Back home, I'm bilingual.
Uh-huh.
I speak both Sinhala and English.
I see. So, Da Silva is a Christian.
No, it's not a Christian name. It's a Portuguese name.
Yes.
So, Portuguese names are the most common last names in Sri Lanka.
I see.
Many people with Portuguese names are Christians, but others, like my family, are Buddhists.
I see. It's interesting because my family is from Goa,
mm-hmm.
Originally. Actually, we're not from there for several generations, mm-hmm. but most of the Konkanis we know from Goa who have the Portuguese name are also Christian, so it's interesting, it's not really one-to-one
in fact, most people with Portuguese last names are not Christians.
Right, so it's more the ones that I happen to meet.
Right, or maybe the whole history of how the names are taken on in Goa, this was different.
Ah.
I don't quite know why people started taking on Portuguese last names. There might have been certain privileges granted with taking on Portuguese names as well as a religion, and many people might have said they were Christians but never really practiced Christianity.
That's true of a lot of names in South Asia, right? In terms of, I mean, in India, I think of caste, you know, there are so many stories of different people changing the name because it's of some social structure reason. That's, you know, so that's an interesting story. So you don't know why it was in your family's case, or?
No, I have no idea. It was mostly people in the coastal areas because the Portuguese didn't really penetrate into the interior of the country.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, it's such a common thing because these names are now the most common names in Sri Lanka.
Mm-hmm.
But there must be a very good reason for so many people.
You have the same last name as the most famous South Asian in America. Dinesh D'Souza.
Oh, D'Souza.
Yeah.
And Da Silva.
Oh, Da Silva. Oh,
yeah.
What am I saying? Sorry. Yes, he's D'Souza. This is
right.
Da Silva. Getting confused. Did I mention this is a very late hour for the interview? So okay, let's again talk about. Why did you decide on America? What was the appeal of that? Or? How did you even come to know of that opportunity? Or
so I came to know of Vassar and American, the whole American college application process by a friend of mine who came in the previous year to to Dartmouth.
Mm.
But why America? Most Sri Lankans in the past, in the 70s, they went to England for their higher education, but in the late 70s, England really started to make it difficult for foreign students to come there. They raised fees, they had different tuition scales for foreign students and British citizens. So a lot of people started looking at America for college. The reason I personally came is I felt it was a big adventure. We were 18, 19, we lived in this small island your whole life. When I left, it was going to be a temporary thing. It's just purely for education.
A lot of people think that, right?
But you know, it's a wonderful, like, wonderful adventure to go to the West. I mean,
sure.
The West is something that you're exposed to a lot.
Uh-huh.
But I think now things have changed a little bit. But at that time, even for middle-class families, like the family I came from, travel to the West was very expensive. And
uh-huh.
People rarely went on vacations to the West. It was mainly on work. So I had never really traveled anywhere in the West before that.
So it was more of an unknown.
An unknown adventure, though, you know, you read American books. And in addition to that, I knew that in order to come to the West, I would have to get money.
Ah.
So my parents encouraged me to apply, but there was no way they were going to pay for me to go to school. The college tuition is so expensive compared to free education system in Sri Lanka. So I was already in university in Sri Lanka.
I see.
And but the education system there was also, I felt quite confined by it. It's a highly specialized system, similar to the British system. So my last 4 years of high school, I only studied science subjects. And then I entered university and I was only studying biology and chemistry in university. I was also getting much more interested in the humanities, in
uh-huh.
English and literature. So a liberal arts education sounded like a great idea.
So that's what...
It was also hard for him to study at that time, right? You should mention
right.
that part.
Right. So that was not the reason I came. The main reason I came was I felt confined and I walked as an adventure to go to the America. But the chance of... And I had lots of friends my age who we all applied to American schools and only a very small number of us got to come because we all depended on getting scholarships to come. So I was very lucky in that I got almost a full scholarship to come.
Amy, what were you saying? It was hard?
Because of the war, the university was closed a lot. So the chance of getting through university in 4 years was almost zero, right? It was closed for months at a time because people
right.
were fighting and killing each other.
Yeah, so you know, it was not because of the war. The war came after I left. The war started after I left.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, the universities there are very involved in political life in the country, quite different from here. Students are very involved in politics, which is very good. But the negative side of it was the campus students are frequently on strike. So because of that, we didn't miss a lot of classes. But that was not the reason I came. At that stage, I didn't even realize how bad things would become later on. Because my brother, who went to campus later on, had a difficult time finishing up. I was not concerned about finishing up. I was just bored with university life.
Yeah.
And here was a college offering to almost pay for my entire 4 years of education in the U.S. So, and it was a long shot. I really wasn't expecting to come. I sent out a couple of applications and I forgot about the whole thing. Got a bunch of rejections. And then suddenly there was a letter in the mail with the school giving me all this money to come.
I'm just very curious because I was born here, so I've come to see how the West looks outside the West only through my cousins. But how did America differ from, or was it the same as what you thought it would be?
First, I think at that age you can adapt pretty easily when you're 18, 19. And I didn't have a lot of preconceived notions of what life was going to be like. In addition to that, I think it wasn't possible to objectively compare America and Sri Lanka because I was leaving my home for the first time, leaving my family. So it was not just coming to a different country, but it was the first time I was living on my own. So it's difficult to say how it would have been different, say, if I left my parents' home in Sri Lanka and started to live on my own in Sri Lanka and started to do a job there. I never had that experience. I went straight from being in my parents' home to being independent in America. But overall, my experiences were, I didn't have any preconceived notions of what to expect, but my experience was very positive. College is a great, a lot of freedom. People are friendly, and there were people from not just America, a lot of, but certainly a lot of students, foreign students in college. So we formed a small foreign South Asian community in college also initially.
Formed it in the sense that there wasn't much of one there before?
There was one there before. Uh-huh. But in addition to sort of adjusting to everything that was new, there was something a little familiar that I related to also, which was small people with an interest in cricket and Indian movies. And
there wasn't any internet to keep up on cricket scores at that time.
The internet had not started.
So tell me how you two met. When was that?
Amy start saying that.
He hates when the story is told.
Well, lucky him, we're getting it on tape now.
Right, exactly. Well, we met in 1990.
Uh-huh.
He was in graduate school and I was working in New Haven, Connecticut. And we used to ride on the same transportation to go to where I worked and where he studied. It's a long, silly story that I won't tell in quite such detail. But
okay.
Actually, we lived about a block apart from each other for all 4 years that he'd been in graduate school and the 4 years that I'd worked after college. Ridden on this bus a lot together and never knew each other. And about 3 months before I was moving away to go to medical school, he started talking to me on the bus. Which he never thinks is how the story goes, but... and asked me to lunch, and I said, very nice to meet you, I'm moving away. And he was persistent.
I asked you for coffee, to go for a coffee in the evening. He said, why don't we meet and have lunch at work? I think going out in the evening was too adventurous, first date.
I wasn't trying to have dates, I was moving away. I was reading books and trying to forget about my personal life.
So
we met on the edge.
Clearly, you didn't move away without you two meeting, right? You met and
right.
You did have a conversation.
Yeah, we had several conversations, and then Amy moved away to Rochester.
But before, there was that meet fall in love stage before I moved away.
That's quite a nice aspect story.
Of that. It's actually a silly story, and at our wedding, various renditions of it were told. I got on the bus and sat on his lap, and the truth was, I was reading a book, and the very first thing he ever said to me was, "What's that book you're reading?" So he started the conversation.
So we've given hope for a lot of our single friends in New Haven
to ride this
that
bus.
You can actually ride the bus and meet someone and get married to them.
But actually, the fun and interesting thing about it, perhaps, is what our impressions of each other were before we met, which was I remember seeing him standing at the bus stop and wondering, where is that guy from? I can't quite picture where he's from looking at him.
Uh-huh.
So for whatever that's worth.
So my impression was I told my roommate, there's this cute redhead.
Uh-huh.
I had to try to get to know her. But I was informed that she's not really a redhead.
So, and not really cute.
Not really cute.
Hi. So, it's a silly story. But suffice it to say, we lived in the same place for a long time and only got to know each other right when I was
just before the end
and moved away. So, lots of phone calls and long drives and late at night.
So this was not in Poughkeepsie?
No, this was in New Haven. This
so
was
New
after
Haven.
College.
Okay.
We met
after
when
college,
he was a graduate student and I was working after college.
Okay, and let me just...
That was 1990.
1990, it said, yeah. So, what were you doing at the time?
I was working, doing research in the Child Study Center at Yale.
Uh-huh.
Studying Tourette's Syndrome and Obsessive Compulsive Disorder and applying to medical school.
Uh-huh. And Arvinda, what were you doing there? You were in graduate school.
I was in graduate school. I was towards the middle of my PhD.
What subject were you doing?
In cell biology.
Uh-huh. So it turned out not to be liberal arts then in the end after all, huh?
When I was in college, I really didn't take too many science courses because I had a lot of the background already from the advanced courses I had in Sri Lanka. So I took a lot of English, philosophy, a couple of history courses, which I think has really helped me a lot even in graduate school in science. I mean, to succeed in science here, being able to write well, being able to communicate well, is much more important than having a sort of detailed focus knowledge on a bit specialized field.
Okay, so how long have you two been married?
7 years.
And where are the places that you've lived in the last 7 years?
We lived in Rochester, New York, which is where I moved to, and then I lived to follow when he finished his PhD. And then we moved back to, near New Haven, to a town called Woodbridge, mm-hmm. and now we've moved here.
So, and you two have been in this area for how long?
8 months.
Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned that in the college you had found the South Asian community. What about the places you lived after college? So we have Rochester, mm-hmm. New Haven, all these different places, and then finally here. Did you find that you were... that a South Asian community was there or was of any interest or?
Mm-hmm. So just, I mean, in college I found, I don't know if I would really call it a South Asian community, I had more a South Asian group of people interested with interest in South Asia,
uh-huh.
foreign students from South Asia. But that my college community was much bigger than that. I had lots of friends from, first of all, foreign students from other countries, as well as a lot of American friends. In fact, some of my close friends who have since sort of become my larger community are Americans who I met at college. And
uh-huh.
certainly when I went to graduate school at Yale, there was a large group of foreign students, a lot of students from the Indian subcontinent once again. They were one social group that I hung out with, in addition to that, the people from my lab, you know, who were from many Americans. But I guess both at Yale and at Vassar, there were groups of people with interest in South Asia, people from South Asia. In Rochester, there, you know, once you get out of the student mode,
uh-huh.
There wasn't really a similar group that I hung out with.
But some of the best Indian food we ever had was in Rochester. It was this amazing South Indian restaurant.
Actually, I've been to it.
There's a big community of people from South Asia who
right.
live there, but a lot
is
of them
are. Is it that
there.
One that's across the street
from
the Indian
north,
store?
From the
yeah.
North
yeah.
Indian one, yep.
What's the name of the place?
I don't remember. They expanded.
But they have two.
That's
across the street. There are two Indian restaurants, the same owner. One of them is a vegetarian South Indian place.
Yes, I know the
exact. And the other one is the north one.
We have.
It's good. Better atmosphere than the one here.
We have a very. Good family friends there. Ever since I was 2, we've gone up to Rochester. Until I moved to North Carolina, I used to go to Rochester twice a year, at least. So mm-hmm. I've been to the very same restaurant
really
you're
good.
Talking about, and it's very good.
So you think that would be a place where there might not be people who are diverse, but in fact, there's a big community of South Asians and Asians in general. I mean, just
right.
at least in the businesses there,
well,
but
that,
not so much in our group of friends from there. That's true.
All the people we knew up there were a pattern I see with a lot of South Asians is that basically wherever there's high tech, you see a lot. And like our good family friends all work for Xerox and Kodak.
Right.
And I mean, they've been there since the 60s, but I think that that's grown since then. So that's probably why there's so many people there. I never, moving to this area,
mm-hmm.
I never expected there to be as many Indians as there are here. Indians, Pakistanis,
mm-hmm.
Sri Lankans, Bangladeshis, everything. And I'm really very surprised.
Mm-hmm. Which probably tells something about you were from New Jersey or you were from, you know,
yeah.
in Connecticut, New York. And
your impression of the South.
which is not really there, so big. Almost any large metropolitan area now has large Indian populations, I think, in this country.
Yeah, I was tickled to death when I heard that there are endless South Asians in Texas. Well, I mean, in certain, you know, the big cities in Texas, because doesn't it all fit the impression you have of Texas, does it?
and I mean, recently in the New York Times magazine, there was an article about how half of all the motels in the United States, really, over half of all the motels in the United States belong to Indians.
That doesn't surprise me one bit.
But I
mean, that means everybody is living in all
right,
parts
I mean,
of the
that
country.
Means those people are spread, you know,
yeah.
Enough, not just in metropolitan areas, across the country.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty, it's really surprising. But it is also, it is these kind of areas because, you know, if you go out to smaller towns, it's a much, I think they're in South Asians in quite a few places spread out over the country, but they're also more in concentrations around certain kinds of jobs and industries.
But they're also feeling different niches than just the high-tech people. And
definitely.
In this same article, I was surprised to know that most of the pawn stores in New York are run by Sri Lankans.
Ignominious association.
Did you say pawn store?
Pornography.
Porn. Okay,
porn.
That's what I thought you. Okay, not pawn. Porn.
No, no.
Pornography stores.
Pornography stores. Yes. I mean, we once seen the newsstands run by Indians in New York.
Yeah.
A lot of newsstands are run by Indians, but this is, I guess, what.
And that seems to have very little to do with Sri Lankan culture, as I understand it. So it couldn't be farther from what you'd expect would be their main industry.
So the Sri Lankan culture generally, I've never been to Sri Lanka, is much more conservative compared to the U.S. in terms of sexual mores and stuff like that. Or
I think there's a greater diversity of views discussed here. When you said you get very conservative people also. So what's out in the open is different in the two countries. What's discussed in the open in Sri Lanka is much more limited. Which I think often doesn't tell you a lot about what people's values and what people find acceptable. Because what they choose to discuss may not really, what's publicly acceptable to discuss may not really reflect the society's real belief about sexuality and other issues.
Or even what's there, you know, because I know that so many people have the impression that, you know, there is no homosexuality in India or something, which is absurd. It's just that it's not something you see reflected in the culture, whereas here it's almost like a political project to make sure that that's reflected in the culture.
But there's another thing also in that, so here it's discussed, but you also see a definite language contraction. There's also a strong homophobic tendency in this society.
Yes.
But in Sri Lanka, although it's not discussed, homosexuality is not really seen as it is also accepted in certain ways as another form of sort of human behavior. There isn't a strong homophobic tendency.
Yeah, this is a strange culture in that it's very conservative and open. So it'd be very curious mix.
Well, but there are no political rights for those people there, even though it may be somehow accepted.
It's
not like you can have gay marriage. And
right, so in the open, those issues are not discussed, but on the other hand, I was not ever raised in a climate, or my friends, we were not in a climate where we, in groups of us who felt that homosexuality was really bad. In fact, we've discussed it as just another form of sexual behavior. Especially among the men, there wasn't there weren't groups of men who were, felt violent towards homosexuals or
fear,
or even repulsed by homosexuality, which I think is there in a certain segment of this society.
What about these South Asians in this area? You folks haven't been here that long. Have you met up with
Asian Voices?
This is pretty much the main contact is through this project.
We actually met a whole Sri Lankan community that we've never been in another place where we lived, or we were ever invited to a party where there were, I don't know, 30 or 50 Sri Lankan families.
That's here in Chapel Hill?
In the Research Triangle area. We went to an enormous party. I don't think we've ever, except in Sri Lanka, met that many Sri Lankans in one party.
Wow. And what was? How did you come to know about that?
They found him, I think.
Yes, I. There was
they found him.
They found him.
In fact,
graduate student.
No, not graduate student. Vasanthan Muthukumaran, who's a postdoc, was actually interviewed for Asian Voices.
Huh.
He saw my name as a new faculty member who's coming here, and he gave me a call and told me about the New Year's Eve party the Sri Lankans were having.
Wow.
So we went for that, and then they had a Sinhala Tamil New Year's party in April. We went for that also with my brother and father were visiting. So
So when you say Sinhala, you mean Sinhalese, Tamilian?
Yeah.
Those two groups together?
No, not those two groups together. No, unfortunately. No. I haven't really met the Tamil community here.
I see.
No. The New Year is the same day for both Sinhalese and Tamils. Sinhala Tamil New Year.
Oh, okay, that's just a phrase to refer to that day.
Right, to April 14th.
Not necessarily those people getting together, unfortunately.
No.
Yeah.
No, even in Sri Lanka, those people don't celebrate the New Year together because, I mean, in Sri Lanka, it's not because of any divisions, it's simply because there are different traditions of celebrating it.
Oh, I see.
There's a religious significance to the New Year also, so that. But over here, they are, I certainly can see how people could get together, but I think there's been a split between the Sinhala and Tamil communities.
Here?
Mm-hmm.
I found that with the Indians, as when we were first in Edison in New Jersey, there was very few Indians and everyone was very friendly. And then, now that there's sort of reached a critical mass where everybody can form their own group, now we have a lot of groups. So maybe they've reached the critical mass here.
I think in Sri Lanka's case, it's mainly to do with the civil war. Because so many of the people, especially among the Tamils who have come here, have in some way been affected by the civil war. And you find yourself in a situation here, when you get together at social gatherings, you can discuss things in ways that you wouldn't discuss in Sri Lanka.
In between?
Between Sinhalese and Tamils. For example, if you're a Tamil person who's a strong supporter of the LTT.
Yeah.
In a social gathering in Colombo, you're very unlikely to come and openly say that.
Right, well, because the military is out somewhere hunting the tiger, so it's...
Yeah,
the...
you're also probably breaking the law because...
wow, really?
It is it's undemocratic laws that have been passed against political groups that are trying to separate the country. So the climate there is such that it's not conducive for free discussions like that. People start to come here and... Often, I guess, while it's good that people can discuss those things, they can reach the stage where they're no longer civil or they can no longer tolerate each other's opinions.
So, have you two met a lot with this Sri Lankan group? Every now and then you see them?
No, twice.
Probably only those two times,
even though
we meant to get together with other members of the group.
Mm.
We haven't formed very natural friendships where we spent a lot of time with any of the people. That's true to say, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they included us in the community, and I guess maybe an interesting fact of that is I think that besides us, there was only one other couple who was not both members Sri Lankan, and the other couple was the woman was from Japan and had kids who were Japanese. Couldn't really speak very much English, so she was very isolated at that gathering.
So did you all feel isolated?
No, I don't think we felt isolated.
But it was striking to me because I was looking around thinking, I am the only person here. And then I realized she was actually also that person, but I couldn't talk to her at all.
Oh.
She was not originally from Sri Lanka.
I think in her case, there was the additional barrier that she didn't speak any English.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Yes, Amy. In fact, probably conversed more than I did with everyone there.
That's not true. I was quiet that night. They were very friendly. It's interesting that most of the community had intermarried with each other.
But are most of them got married and came here? Or
yes.
These?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right, so it's not a matter of...
There wasn't that much of a choice.
Most of the people are coming once they got married.
Uh-huh.
The second party, there were a couple of people who had married here, who had married Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever met Sri Lankans who married Sri Lankans here?
Yeah, your relatives are marrying each other.
Who?
The couple who are in Rochester in Georgia.
You haven't met either of them.
One of them is your relative, though.
We've
heard of this relative. Who.
It's rumored that...
No, I guess it's the truth. That sort of is people who met here, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't know them well.
So, do you feel like that's a... I mean, what do you feel your community is... now here? I mean, independent of Sri Lankan, whatever, like if I had to ask you.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Sri Lankan thing is really not a community.
Okay.
It's a it's more a group to get together to celebrate certain holidays.
I see.
So it's, and we've never really been a part of a community that's been defined by sort of particular region or of origin. Our friends, I think, have always come from, mostly through work, people we have met through work. A lot of them happen to be people from the subcontinent, Indian subcontinent. But would you agree with that?
And some of them are Jewish, which is my ethnic heritage, but it's not particularly like they're either Sri Lankan or they're Jewish. In fact, they're more likely to be somehow sort of from somewhere near Sri Lanka or somehow sort of from one of our workplaces than... I mean, I guess we do some Jewish cultural things with friends sometimes, but we often have, you know, a given party or meal like that, we'll invite our friends who are Turkish and all kinds of backgrounds that are not necessarily Jewish even to that gathering. So even the gatherings that are supposed to be about one or the other of our cultures, there's a lot of mixing.
Mm-hmm. What are the Jewish things also around calendar holidays?
Yeah, like we... Arvind is the best observer of Passover in our entire family. He's one of the rites of Passover is you're not allowed to eat until sunset. Uh-huh. He's better at keeping that than anyone else, family or friends, that ever comes to the house.
So what sort of, between Judaism and Buddhism, what sort of things do you observe, like the Passover? What else in terms of, are there many of those kind of rituals that either of you two participate in, or...?
Mainly the Jewish holidays of that, which is only Passover, really.
It's pretty much that one story, yeah, isn't it? I got the only one there. I don't need to go fishing.
No, there were other things there.
I mean, we had a Jewish wedding and a Sinhala wedding. That's probably worth knowing.
In Sri Lanka. But in terms of regular, on an annual basis, things we celebrate, there isn't much of Passover. And now the American holidays.
Well, we light Hanukkah candles.
Thanksgiving. That's what it passed on, thanks to me.
Hanukkah candles.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No Buddhist holidays, really. I think it's partly because to celebrate all of those holidays, you need to be part of a big community of people who are doing it. And that doesn't really happen.
And I think also, for both of us, more the things are cultural rather than deeply religious, because we eat a lot of Sri Lankan foods or a lot of Jewish foods or have friends who know about the culture of each of the places, but we don't go to a lot of the religious ceremonies. I mean, we haven't gone to synagogue very much, maybe once or something for some reason.
Mm. Tell me about the wedding. I want to hear that. So there were two weddings? Two ceremonies,
yeah,
I should say. Two weddings.
Married twice to the same woman.
Right. Within a week.
Within a week.
We had a Jewish wedding here, which we fixed. Actually, in a good example of that, our friends and we essentially made the wedding. So I baked the cake with some friends.
Oh, wow.
And we grew flowers with other friends.
I negotiated the fee with the rabbi.
You know, for example, our friends who we grew the flowers with, the woman is Jewish and her husband is from Honduras.
Uh-huh.
Another friend who we baked the cake with, one of them is a Filipino man.
So that was probably our community in Rochester.
Yeah, so these
past
kind
the
of
wedding, we don't really see the wedding as a Jewish wedding. I mean, the person who actually married us was a rabbi, and there was probably a 20-minute segment, or half an hour segment that was Jewish. But the bigger part of our wedding, I think, was
all these friends,
all our friends and family
Jewish
who helped
things.
Us out and
right.
and set everything up together, and our friends who traveled from far to be with us.
But it was important to me that we have a Jewish wedding.
It
and
was more
to
important,
our family.
No, it was more important to your family.
No, it was important to me, too. Jewish weddings are nice.
Yeah.
But so we very much made that wedding, and then when we went to Sri Lanka, his parents made a beautiful, huge, formal, much more elaborate Sinhala service with the whole Sinhala ceremony. So it kind of turns your possible stereotypes of America versus Sri Lanka on its head, because we did a very makeshift, smaller thing in the States, and one in Sri Lanka was in this enormous hotel, and I was performing all these rituals that I didn't really fully understand, including drinking milk for fertility and all kinds of things.
I didn't understand.
Giving of leaves to various family members.
It's a priest for Buddhism?
No, it's not a Buddhist. There isn't really a Buddhist wedding, at least in the Buddhism perspective in Sri Lanka. It's more cultural ceremony. Someone similar to a marriage not a broker, but a person who in society who arranges marriages between people, he also conducts marriages. There's a lot of superstition associated with the wedding. Everything has to start at a certain time, and auspicious times for everything.
So it's on the continent too. It's the same.
It was fun.
It is fun though. Though Amy didn't understand much, but everything was done in Sinhala.
But I got the general idea. We had our Jewish Mexican friends at both weddings. They represented my family at his wedding. So it was like supposed to be sides for each family, so they were standing in as my family.
Wow.
And we know them because the man was in his lap.
Yeah, the so for religion, for both of you now, here is more of a personal thing than any sort of, you don't do much in terms of community. You're saying it's largely not available here?
It's not that it's not available. I mean, one, it's not available to practice religious holidays in a more in a cultural sense. But for deep spiritual practice, you don't even need a community to practice a religion. But I think neither one of us is very religious. Following a traditional religion, Judaism or Buddhism.
Well, we enjoy celebrating some of those holidays. I mean, like you enjoyed going to the Sinhala New Year. And we did do a Passover with the three couples that got together for Passover. Only one of them, both members, were Jewish, and the other two, they were each half and half.
But we don't practice in a religion.
Right. Well, but we try to learn more about that religion. I think when we do that ceremony. I guess I still have hopes that someday I'll practice religion more.
Is this at all a, we should mention for the record, you two are very happily about to have your first child within 2 months. So is this...
6 weeks.
6 weeks. Counting down.
Maybe sooner.
Is that at all a discussion you two have had or thought about in terms of
the religion of the child?
Child's, yeah, or that sort of those kind of questions about upbringing, or
I think we've talked about upbringing, but not in a religious sense. We might have to talk about it at some point. You know, maybe think about upbringing and using religion as a way of teaching certain ideas or philosophies. But I think, I don't know about my, I think it won't become an issue because I think we still have fairly sort of, developed philosophies of what's right and wrong.
Right.
And I think you can teach that without resorting to, without using religion.
Well, and you can tell the stories of those two religions in a way that doesn't make them have to be chosen between. And there's a lot of history mixed in to both religions.
I mean, I think the religious issue, at least for me, I might think of it more like when you're a kid in school, all the kids want to know what your religion is. And it's maybe awkward for a young kid to say he or she has no religion. But I don't think you really need the religion to teach the child what's right and wrong. It's more...
But a lot of that is also cultural, and they can give an answer that's cultural to that, their origins. I mean, I don't think my answer was particularly more than that when I was asked that question.
You said you were Jewish.
Right, but you could say, you know, my father is Buddhist and my mother is Jewish, and that's an answer, and I'm both.
Are there some principles, I'm just curious, between you two that you've seen in common of those two in terms of teaching? I'm just curious, that's one of the things I think about. So is that...
Well, I always make jokes about how the Sinhalese and the Jews are very similar in a lot of cultural ways. I think their values for their families are very similar.
But those are very different things. I mean, Sinhalese is not the same as Buddhist.
No, but your culture is both.
Sinhalese is an ethnic identity. And there are Sinhalese who are Christians as well as Sinhalese who are Buddhist.
But I mean it more in terms of your family's values for you, or your relatives' family's values. There's a lot of focus on kids and education and a lot of things that are very similar. That's not the deep religious.
Yeah, okay, no, but that's also an interesting connection that certain values might be held in common. And when you point that out, is that with any feeling that there's a difference somehow between these values and what's reflected in the mainstream culture in America, or is this nothing that's different, these kind of values that you're putting emphasis on? Is it the same as what one would associate with being American, or is it, is there any difference between those two things or not?
So let's step back a little bit. I think most of the values we have come from us being individuals and not necessarily from a religion.
Or culture.
Well, culture is more difficult to sort out, because religion says explicitly, you know, these are a set of principles or values by which you live your life. So it's easy to see, have you listened to those, have you followed those?
Sure.
The influence of culture is more subtle, I think, and difficult to tease out. So I think certainly my culture is someone who spent 18 years in Sri Lanka and then another, how many years now? 19 years. Another 19 years in the USA. I mean, all those have had influences on what I think is right and wrong.
But I just thought it was in Amy in the way you said it. Maybe it's just the way we were talking, the setup of whatever I'd asked previously. I don't know, but was there, when you had pointed out as cultures, leave the religion thing aside, just as cultures, I mean, do you feel there's anything distinctive about these values you're picking out in these two cultures, or?
I don't think that they're particularly mainstream American values. I mean, I have to say, whenever Evander wants to criticize something that I'm holding as a belief, value, or act, he usually calls me an American.
That's interesting.
Which is, I mean, I think, so if I culturally identify myself in some way, I probably would more say I'm a Jewish person from New York City, which is very different than a lot of people in America in both of those ways. So the idea that we have lots in common with mainstream America, I'm not sure it's something either of us wants to own up to. And usually when he's saying that I'm American, it's not for a good reason.
So,
and that's
true. Yeah.
So I think no one really feels they're a part of mainstream America. Everyone thinks that they're different from mainstream America. So what is mainstream America? I think in some ways we are a part of mainstream America. It depends on who's looking at us. I mean, many people view Amy as an American, probably less at me. I think that I'm American, but there are people who do that because I've spent a very long time in this country.
But for example,
I think it's difficult. I think nothing called mainstream American values.
That's a legitimate answer. That's an interesting answer to the question. What were you about to say?
I was just thinking, in our most recent example, was trying to go and get some things for this impending baby.
I'm
going to this horrifying consumerist Babies R Us store where only in America would you have, you know, the choice of 50 different cribs and the assumption that you need to buy all these items in order to have a baby.
And think about all these different choices.
Exactly. And I mean, I didn't feel very comfy in that story either. I think there's something very alienating about assuming and being sucked into this whole consumerist way of thinking. So I don't know, maybe that's a way of feeling alienated from whatever you perceive to be the mainstream thing.
Well, you say that you feel alienated from it, but on the other hand, you insist that we go to Raleigh to the baby's ass, and that's the only place to buy baby's clothes. You wouldn't patronize the little baby store in a mom and pop show in Chapel Hill,
but
so
we
in a sense,
find one.
But in a sense, we are supporting the mainstream values and mainstream.
Yes, but we haven't yet bought anything from that place. So that's the other point. Look at this over here. The cat is looking in at you. She's in jail.
So, just to change the subject a little bit. You would, your parents are visiting right now, and I was just wondering, how much do you keep up with family back in Sri Lanka?
Very much. So I very much lead a dual life. You know, even though I've been here for a very long time, I go back to Sri Lanka regularly.
What's regularly, roughly?
More recently, I've been going back every year.
Wow.
For about 2 months each time. Before that, I probably every other year as a student. Since I'm always going back for 2 to 3 months at a time. So I've kept in touch with friends in Sri Lanka and my parents. But in addition to that, you know, we were talking before about what are the things you do to celebrate or keep in touch with your culture, you know, holidays you celebrate or certain occasions you go for. I think the way I have done it more is to get to have my my research interest, my academic interest in Sri Lanka. So I work on research projects in Sri Lanka. In addition to that, I always read the Sri Lankan newspapers, follow the politics, the sports. So in that sense, I've kept myself pretty involved with the things that are happening there.
And how do you get those? Is that do you get those papers delivered or?
No, through the internet.
Through the internet.
And going and working there.
Uh-huh. When did that start happening? How many years into the career were you able to arrange that?
I was able to arrange that for the first time about 3 years ago when I started getting a degree in public health. I did my master's in public health research project in Sri Lanka, and I set up some connections there, and since then I've gone back 2 years in a row after that and worked at research institutions in Sri Lanka. And that, you know, through my work I also am regularly in touch with people there, people from there write to me, so hopefully with my lab here I'll be able to bring people over from Sri Lanka, students, postdocs, to come and work on public health problems here. I mean, to work on Sri Lankan public health problems, but get trained in